Welcome to the Kitchen Counter Podcast, episode 222, Bullocatani. Hey everybody, thank you so much for downloading and listening to this episode of the show. I'm Roger, your host, and this is the podcast all about home cooking, getting in the kitchen, learning new things, having fun. And for this very first episode of 2023, we're going to be getting into the kitchen and cooking up one of my favorite wintertime comfort foods, a good old batch of mulligatawny soup. Before we get there, a little bit of housekeeping, of course. First and foremost, the show notes for this episode will be over at kitchencounterpodcast.com/222. That's kitchencounterpodcast.com/222. You will find the show notes there. Probably most importantly, the recipe that I'm going to be going through here in the second part of the show. You'll find it there in the show notes, along with the links to a few of the other things I mention later on in this episode. Also over in the show notes are links to other points of interest, like my social media. Also, the Nitty Grits Network, which this show is a proud member of. That's a network of shows out of the Southern Food and Beverage Museum that focus on food and culture and drink. So head over to southernfood.org to find out more about the Southern Food and Beverage Museum and the Nitty Grits Network. My email is feedback@kitchencounterpodcast.com. If you want to shoot me a note, I always love hearing from you. Well, I can't believe it's 2023. When I was a kid, I didn't even know the years went that high. 2000 seemed crazy. And that's come and gone in, you know, over two decades ago. So time marches on. I can't believe I've been putting out this podcast in some way, shape, or form for 10 years this year, I think. That's pretty crazy. I got a few months before official 10-year anniversary, but that's wild to think about. I know it's been a little slow over the holidays. I hope you had a great holiday season, whatever it is you choose to celebrate, and a new year. It's been crazy here. I've been really busy. Work's been insane. Just everything. My son is on a basketball tournament team now, so the weekends are pretty much full of that. So I'm trying to carve out some time to get some episodes out. So we're going to start doing that here with this one today. So we're going to talk a little bit about the subject matter at hand, and then we're going to pop over to the kitchen, and we're going to actually cook through the recipe that we're going to talk about today. I'll probably get out a smorgasbord episode this month as well, and I think I'll save more of the show-related topic and chit-chat for that episode, because I really want to get into this mulligatawny soup episode here. So keep an eye out for a smorgasbord episode later, where we'll talk about things going on with the show, some items coming up in the future. I've got some other Let's Cook ideas that have been suggested by members of our Facebook group, the Kitchen Counter Coffee Break, that I want to get to as well. So lots of things swirling, but let's table those for now so we can jump right into the episode today, episode 222, Mulligatawny. All right, I mentioned in the intro that today we're going to be making some mulligatawny soup. Apologies ahead of time, too. I love saying the word mulligatawny. It's about one of the coolest food words I know. So it rolls off the tongue. It's fun to say. But mulligatawny soup, it's fragrant, it's warm and spicy, it's luscious and creamy. For me, it's just, you know, perfect for a cold, wet winter evening, which at least here in Oregon in January, we get plenty of those. I know a lot of the rest of you around the country are getting maybe wetter winter evenings than you want. But if you're looking for a reasonably healthy comfort food dish to cheer you up, to perk up your taste buds, you can do a lot worse than working up a batch of mulligatawny soup. Like so many of my favorite dishes, and probably your favorite dishes too, many dishes, you know, in the grand melting pot of world cuisine, born of empire, Mulligatawny is a combination of ideas and flavors, of culinary expectations, of culinary journeys. When you look up Mulligatawny recipes, no two recipes are the same. There are as many variations as there are cooks who make it. And I know I say that about other foods too, but with Mulligatawny, I find that it is really quite true. Now, a Mulligatawny usually combines some essential ingredients, at least in my opinion, things like aromatics, especially onions, some sort of a curry powder, a coconut milk, but even ingredients from recipe to recipe vary widely. It makes it difficult to nail down what you would consider a quote-unquote authentic recipe. And maybe part of the charm of a Mulligatawny is that the authentic flavor of the recipe lies in the fact that you can adapt it to so many different palates using so many different ingredients and still call it a Mulligatawny. Some recipes have apples, some have hot peppers, other recipes call for lentils, while others call for things like mutton or grated coconut or pickled mango. It seems, though, that in your Mulligatawny recipes, the essential thread through all of them is the curry, because after all, it is a dish that originates in the south of India and in the British Empire, in which Mulligatawny is beloved, and of course, other places around the world, curry is an important flavor. If you go back and look at the origin of Mulligatawny, and start with the name, because I've already mentioned it, the origin of the name seems fairly clear, although it is sometimes disputed, but most sources attribute it to the South Indian Tamil words, two words, and I'm not going to pronounce these right, so forgive me, but milagu, meaning pepper, and tanir, meaning water. Put those together and you get pepper water. But if you say them quickly, milagu, tanir, you can see how over time and getting anglicized, we have the modern word we use today, Mulligatawny. So that's the high-level flyby of the word. The origin of the recipe itself is less clear. Some sources put the origin of Mulligatawny somewhere near the end of the 18th century out of southern India. I already mentioned the Tamil people. Other sources attribute it to the period of the British Raj, or also known as the Crown Rule in India, which began in 1858. There's an apocryphal story that I've read a few places, but I haven't had time to track down the source of it, and the source wasn't readily apparent. But one story says that during British rule in India, the British colonists and soldiers were not willing to give up their traditional bowl of soup to start a meal, and they insisted that the locals come up with something to fill that need. And since soups aren't really common in Indian cuisines, they do exist, but they're not everywhere. The local enterprising Tamils watered down their local dish called pepper water, and thus the culinary ancestor of Mulligatawny was born. A simpler explanation might be that it was just simply adapted from a soup that already existed in South India called rasam. What we do know about Mulligatawny is by the mid-19th century, the middle 1800s, Mulligatawny is referenced in cookbooks in Britain. One famous cookbook is Eliza Acton's pioneering volume, Modern Cookery for Private Families. I have a copy of the 1865 edition. But I believe that the Mulligatawny was also present in the original 1845 version, but Acton provides a fairly detailed recipe for Mulligatawny with two main variations and several different variations using different types of meat, mutton, fowl. One variation has pickled mango, while the other features grated coconut. Neither features apples, which is interesting because apples is a very common ingredient, at least from what I found in modern Mulligatawnys. But regardless of the exact origin story, two things are certain. Mulligatawny is certainly South Indian in origin, and it's become a beloved and favorite dish, not only in Britain, not only in England, but around the world. It's comfort food, and it's pretty healthy as those dishes go. It's also pretty easy to put together, which I think you'll see in the next segment when I hop in the kitchen and actually make it. And it's great that it's easy because given its huge flavors, it makes it almost hard to believe that you could put something together so tasty and so flavorful in like 45 or 50 minutes. This is something you can put together on a weeknight using mostly pantry ingredients. So in a minute, I'm going to walk through my version of mulligatawny. Since everybody has their own version, I thought I'd share my own version. Like I said a minute ago, what I love about this recipe is that nearly everything in it might already be in most home cooks' pantry. The most essential ingredient, though, as I mentioned or alluded to before, is a good yellow curry powder. I prefer a mild or a sweeter curry powder to a hot curry powder for mulligatawny, but your mileage may vary. If you want more spice in your mulligatawny, feel free to adjust the spice and the heat level according to what you like to use and what you have on hand. I also like to use coconut milk in my mulligatawny. Beyond that, you can experiment with the aromatics or the other spices fairly easily, and you'll usually come out with good success. My mulligatawny also features chicken and rice in the soup itself. You could also substitute split red lentils in for the rice and chicken. You could take the meat out completely and just increase the rice, for example, to make it a vegetarian dish. Really, if you Google mulligatawny recipes, you are going to find many really highly rated ones. I haven't cooked them all, but I've looked through several of them, and they seem pretty good. Some will use flour as a thickener. In the recipe we're going to cook through in a minute, I don't do that, but I do choose to blend up most of the ingredients to give you sort of a thick tomato soup consistency. In fact, sometimes I think of this mulligatawny like if a nice warm tomato soup grew up, it would grow up to become this mulligatawny soup. Okay, I don't think I have anything else to say about mulligatawny other than getting in the kitchen and cooking it. We're going to do that in the next segment. Remember, the recipe will be over at kitchencounterpodcast.com/222. Find the show notes there. Listen through the recipe. I'll catch you at the end, and we'll wrap it up. All right, let's jump into the kitchen. Hey everybody, welcome to the kitchen. Tonight we're making up a batch of warm, comforting mulligatawny soup. And the recipe is going to be in the show notes, which I've mentioned at the beginning of the episode. So if you need measurements, head over there to get it. I'm going to go through the list now, but again, don't think you have to write everything down because I'm just reading them off. Head over to the show notes, get the full recipe. But before we get into actually making it, I do want to just run through the ingredient list and run through a high-level step-by-step of what we're going to be doing. Then we'll get into actually cooking up some mulligatawny. First thing, we want some butter or some oil. I've got about 2 ounces or so. One yellow onion, roughly chopped. One carrot, peeled and diced. One celery stalk, diced. I have 3 cloves of garlic, minced. 2 teaspoons of ginger, finely minced. One large firm apple. I'm using a Granny Smith. I'm going to go ahead and core that and then dice it finely. 1 14.5 ounce can of diced tomatoes. Then we have some spices. For my mulligatawny, I use about 1.5 tablespoons of a yellow curry powder. Then I add 1/2 teaspoon of paprika, 1/2 teaspoon of ground turmeric, about 1/4 teaspoon of fresh ground black pepper. We're gonna want some stock, either chicken or vegetable stock. In this case, 3 cups. I've got chicken stock. I want 1 cup of unsweetened coconut milk. Now you could make your mulligatawny vegetarian, but I'm actually gonna add some diced chicken breast to mine. I just cooked up 1 boneless, skinless chicken breast, roasted in the oven, and then finally diced that. And then I like rice in my mulligatawny soup, so I've got 1/4 cup of long grain jasmine rice that I'm going to be adding in towards the end of cooking. That's the ingredient list. The general flow here is I'm going to cook up the aromatics in the butter, or you could also use oil. That's the onions, the carrot, the celery. To that, we're going to add the garlic, the ginger, the tomatoes, all of the spices I mentioned, and then the stock. And we're going to let that simmer, and the apple. We're going to let that simmer for just a little bit. I'm going to transfer all of that to a blender, and I'm going to blend that up until it's nice and smooth. And that's actually going to give our soup a little bit of body, Some recipes call for like a flour to thicken or a cornstarch to thicken the soup. We're not going to do that because we're going to be blending all of the main portions of the soup up. It'll give us a nice body to work with. I'm going to return all the blended ingredients back to my soup pan here. And then we're going to add in the chicken, the coconut milk, and the rice. And we're going to let that simmer off until the rice is finished cooking. And then we'll be ready to eat some of our mulligatawny. So I've got my butter melted in a saucepan here. I'm going to go ahead and put in the onion, the carrot, and the celery. Now, confession time, I actually just sliced my onion. I was feeling a bit lazy. I didn't really feel like dicing it up really finely. So I just went ahead and sliced it, knowing that I'm going to be blending it all anyway. I'm going to be using my Vitamix blender, so there is nothing that's going to get through that blender in any sort of chunky fashion. So I'm not too concerned about how I've cut up my veg. Just fine enough that, you know, it all gets cooked through in this first phase in the butter. So we're going to let that cook until everything gets a bit translucent and takes on a little bit of color. That said, I did dice up my carrots fairly small, just so I didn't have any huge, big chunks of carrots that weren't gonna be able to cook down in the pot here. Now, some recipes for mulligatawny call for all sorts of different ingredients. Onion seems to be fairly common and fairly standard. Beyond that, it can go a lot of different directions. There's recipes that will call for hot peppers to give your dish a bit of a spice. There's recipes that do or do not call for apple. There's recipes that call for other aromatics and other spices. Look around because there's a different mulligatawny for pretty much anyone who makes it, at least on a consistent basis. And there's really no right or wrong way to make a mulligatawny, I think. To me, the pivotal ingredient is the curry powder. That's what gives it its signature flavor. And of course, the other spices as well. But I feel if you took those out, then you'd be left with a pretty decent, in this case, chicken soup. And that's not really what we're going for, or chicken and rice soup anyway. But that's not what we're going for. We want a nice mulligatawny, and that's the spices and also the coconut milk, I think, that are going to give it that flavor. So in my mind, those are sort of the non-negotiable ingredients, the spices and the coconut milk. But as far as the aromatics and other things, look around on the internet, find some different recipes, see what might sound appealing to you, and you know, give them a shot, see what you like. I think the flavor profiles will be generally similar. Again, they're all going to be using sort of a curry powder or at least spices that you would associate with a curry powder, like the turmeric, the cumin, the coriander, that sort of spice profile, maybe even cinnamon. So you're going to get that warm spice out of this mulligatawny. That's what you're really shooting for here. Another word on ingredients. I'm using rice in my mulligatawny. I like to cook the rice right in it. Some people like to serve it on top of rice or in a bowl with rice or rice as an accompaniment or a side. I like to put mine right in there. Some recipes call for split red lentils to give the mulligatawny a nice body. So again, lots of variety, and don't get too hung up on exact measurements and getting this perfect, because once you cook it once, or you know, you'll have an idea of how it's going to work for you. So I've got my onion, celery, carrot in the pot here. I'm just giving them some heat, letting them soften up and take on a little bit of color. You can probably hear that. While they're doing that, I have a couple other ingredients I need to prep. I've got most everything ready to go. I've got my spices measured, my chicken done, everything like that. I am going to grab my Granny Smith apple. Now, if I were doing it properly, I would core this apple, I would peel this apple, and then I would be left with nothing but, you know, flesh that I could dice up finely. I said I'm putting it through the Vitamix blender. I'm not going to peel it. There's no bit of peel that's going to survive that blending. So I'm just going to save myself a step. And I'm not even going to cut core it. I'm just going to go ahead and use my chef's knife. And I just cut, I just take my apple, set it down, look, so I'm looking at the top stem, and I just get close to where I know the core is going to be and cut one whole side off. And then I just turn it 90 degrees, do it again. So I've come out with like nearly a whole half an apple. Now I'm cutting off like 3/4 of an apple, turn it again, now like, you know, half an apple, and now maybe just like a little piece. And I end up with this nice little square core then I can just toss, so I don't have to fiddle around with finding an apple core or doing anything like that. Then I'm going to go ahead and dice this apple up kind of finely here. Not that finely, I guess. Again, I'm blending it, so I'm not going to be super picky about how small this is. If you don't plan on blending your mulligatawny, which you certainly don't have to do, then you want to be a little more careful about how you're chopping up your ingredients, because you don't want a bunch of different sized bits in your soup that could make for an odd eating experience. So just kind of pay attention to that if you don't plan on blending. Or if you plan on using something like a hand blender or an immersion blender, you might want smaller pieces to begin with, you know, so the blender can handle it. You know, I'm not a huge fan of supermarket apples in general. I think most of them lack in the flavor department, although they're bringing in some varieties that are pretty good these days. But, you know, for just a solid, firm, tart, and sweet apple, you can do a lot worse than a Granny Smith. I think it's probably the most versatile cooking apple you can get in most grocery stores. Whenever a recipe calls for an apple, it's almost always what I go for, unless it has a very specific reason for a different variety of apple. But Granny Smith, they're great to cook with. They're great for snacking on too if you like green apple. That is your quintessential green apple flavor. Vegetables are getting nice and soft, starting to take on just a little bit of color. We're going to let them go for a little bit longer. While they're doing that, a couple notes about other ingredients. Garlic, of course, if you have fresh garlic on hand, you just mince up about 3 cloves of that. If you don't have fresh garlic, you could put some garlic powder, maybe like a half a teaspoon or something in the, probably more like a quarter teaspoon in the spice mix, depending on your taste. Speaking of being lazy, which I have been really lazy over the holiday in the last few weeks, you know, we all have our reasons for being lazy, and there's nothing wrong with it, quite frankly. But, you know, I've started using, or at least I've started having it on hand, frozen garlic, frozen ginger, not so much frozen herbs yet, although I might try some of those out. But there's this company called Dorot Gardens, D-O-R-O-T, Dorot Gardens. And I came across some of their frozen garlic and frozen ginger. And they're frozen in the equivalent of, say, let's say 1 teaspoon sizes, or like for the garlic, 1 clove sizes, roughly. They come in a little plastic container. You just pop out one at a time when you need them. You know, the garlic, I think it's like garlic, a little bit of sunflower oil, and maybe a little bit of sea salt. But it's about the closest thing I've found in the grocery store to real garlic, other than buying an actual head of garlic and, you know, taking a clove or two off and using it. You know, they're better than the jarred garlic. The jarlic, which is fine, but it kind of has a flavor and a smell to it, right, because of the liquid that it's preserved in. If you're looking for sort of a neutral garlic or a real neutral, pure ginger flavor, these frozen thing. In fact, I think I have a ginger one in the freezer now. Let me grab it. Yeah, crushed ginger, Dorot Gardens. 20 cubes, 1 cube equals 1 teaspoon. No preservatives, vegan, gluten-free. It's got ginger, water, citrus fibers, and lemon concentrate for the ingredients. Yeah, very handy to have, especially if you, you know, want to make something, you don't have any fresh ginger on hand. You don't want to use ginger, powdered ginger. That frozen stuff will last a long time in your freezer, and it's pretty, pretty good. Okay. By the way, I'm not getting a kickback from Dorot Gardens. It's just, I found the product, and I like it, and I think it's a good product. So if you're looking to save a little time and headache in the kitchen, you know, you can save a few minutes or have ingredients on hand. Okay, I think my my aromatic veggies are looking pretty good now. I think let's move on to the next step. So now that those are cooked down a little bit, they've got some color, they've softened up. I'll turn the temperature down, got them a little bit high there. Now that they've got some color, I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to add in the garlic, the ginger, the apples I just diced up, and my diced tomatoes. So I'm going to go ahead and put the ginger in with the veg. I'm going to go ahead and put my garlic in. I'm going to go ahead and pick up my apple here in my hands and just drop those in. And then my can of diced tomatoes, juice and all, going straight in. I probably should have got a larger pot, but again, being lazy, I didn't feel like digging through the cabinet to get my Dutch oven out. Okay, give all this a stir. So now in the pot, we've got onion, carrot, celery, diced tomatoes, ginger, and garlic. Give them a stir. Obviously, it's very thick. There's not much liquid in there yet. Now I'm going to go ahead and add in my spices. So that would be my yellow curry powder, my paprika, my turmeric, my black pepper. It's going to seem like a lot because I think this comes out to, by my measurements, a couple of tablespoons, a little more than a couple tablespoons of spices. So it looks like quite a lot, but this is going to be the really wonderful spice flavor foundation for your dish, right? So I'm just going to go ahead and sprinkle this in there. I'm going to go ahead and give the spices a stir and let them get incorporated and hit some of that hot butter in there. Bloom a little bit. Oh my gosh, it smells so good already. I think this is a great dish for people that are curious maybe about Indian food, Indian cuisine, or at least those kind of flavor profiles, but they're not ready to like jump feet first into like a spicy vindaloo or something like that. This is just a nice, tasty, warm, comforting bowl. Okay. Now that I've got the spices in there, I'm going to go ahead and add in my 3 cups of chicken stock. I'm going to turn up my heat while I'm doing that because I want to bring this to a boil. So now I've got everything but the coconut milk, the chicken, and the rice in there. We're going to bring it to a boil, turn it down, and I'm going to let it simmer for about 15 minutes with the lid on. So let's take a break. When it's done simmering for about 15 minutes, I'll come back, we'll blend it up, and then we'll finish it off with the chicken, coconut milk, and the rice. And we'll be nearly on our way to a nice warm bowl of mulligatawny. All right, welcome back. We've been simmering this for about 15 minutes, maybe 20 minutes, with the lid on. I'm going to go ahead and pop the lid off. Got a beautiful orange golden color in there. The apples have taken on that color. Now, my plan here is to blend all of this to thicken it up a bit. Again, if you don't want to blend your mulligatawny, perfectly cool. You don't need to. But that's how I like to make mine a little bit thicker. So I don't think I can get this whole thing in my Vitamix at once. So I'm just going to ladle in about half a batch. Then I've got a bowl that'll pour it out into so I can blend the second batch. So let me just ladle about half of this into the Vitamix. Appealing sound, isn't it? Smells so good.
Okay. I'm going to go ahead and then just give this the full works on the old Vitamix here. I want this pretty much pureed smooth, so you'll pardon the noise for a moment. That is all she wrote. It does not take long in the Vitamix. All right, it's almost got the hue of a very nice tomato soup. Got a very orange look to it. So I'm going to go ahead and pour that into the bowl, and I'm going to go ahead and pour the rest of my unblended mulligatawny right into the Vitamix container. Oh yeah, I did estimate about half. That's pretty good. We'll give this the quick once over in the Vitamix. Blend that up. Done and done. Just gonna make sure I don't have any weird little bits left in my pan here, which of course I do, so I'm gonna wipe those out. Don't want any weird bits left over. Okay, I'm gonna put that back on the burner. I'm gonna go ahead and pour my blended soup back in. Now, I'm gonna turn the heat back up to medium on that. My goal here now is to go ahead and add, I'm gonna add the rice. I'm gonna let that cook, and at the very end, I'm gonna put the chicken and the coconut milk in to heat through and combine. So I've got a good heaping quarter cup of long grain jasmine rice. I'm gonna go ahead and throw that into the soup. If you like yours more ricey, you can put a little more in. If you like it less, you can obviously do less. So that was sort of the big phase two here. Now what I'm gonna do is put it back to a simmer, get the lid on it until the rice is done, and that'll be probably about 15 minutes. So we'll take another quick break as the rice cooks, and then we'll be back to put the finishing touches on our mulligatawny. All right, we're back. We're bringing this mulligatawny home. By the way, I just want to let you know what I did for the last 15 minutes or so while the rice was cooking in the mulligatawny. I emptied and filled the dishwasher. Not fishing for kudos, but I'm just saying, my, how I hate to empty the dishwasher, but I had some time and I did it. All right, let's look at the mulligatawny. Let's see what we got going on. Give it a stir. You know, by the way, I stirred this once or twice just to make sure the rice didn't stick to the bottom while it was cooking, but so now I'm going to dump in my very finely cubed up boneless, skinless chicken breast. This is already cooked, so it's not going to take any time in the soup to cook. It's just going to heat through. So I'm going to go ahead and add that in. Again, don't get totally hung up on the quantity. But, you know, one average-sized chicken breast is going to be plenty. It probably turned out to be like a little over a cup of diced chicken. I'm guessing maybe a cup and a half. Now, I've got a cup of coconut milk. I'm not sure if I'm going to put it all in there or not, so I'm going to start with pouring about half a cup in and going ahead and stirring that in. I just want to make sure. You can't take it out once it goes in, right? So just want to make sure it's looking like, yeah, I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to do about 3/4 a cup. Go ahead and stir that in. And then I'm going to bring the heat back up to just maybe medium-low. I just want to bring this back up to a simmer. And I'm only gonna need to let it simmer maybe 2 or 3 minutes, again, to heat that cooked chicken through, to heat that coconut milk I just incorporated. It lightened up the color a bit. Now we're looking at a nice pale carrot color, I would say. Sort of a yellow-orange looking color. Okay, that is heating through. Now, one thing I have not done this whole time is actually add any salt, and that's, I wanted to wait till the end We've got a lot of flavors happening in this, but I'm sure it's going to need some salt. So, and that's to taste, right? So I'm going to go ahead and this is coming back up to a simmer now. I've stirred in the chicken and the coconut milk. I'm going to give this a taste just to kind of see how much, if any, salt I need to add back into this. It just lightly coats the back of a spoon, so it's really not too thick. It's not like a chowder or a stew. It's like a really light tomato soup texture, I would say. All right, let's taste it. It does not need much salt. It's actually, the flavor is really nice, but you know, it's just got sort of, I don't know how to explain a dish that tastes good but needs salt, like there's no salt in it. It's like it's got round edges. Does that make sense? It's like it's rounded off. There's not, nothing really jumps out at you. So I'm just gonna take a healthy pinch of salt. Mix that in here. I might even take just a splash of lemon juice, a little acid, and pop that in here as well, just to brighten it up. Acid oftentimes acts in a similar way to salt when you add it to your dish as far as flavor profiles go. Okay, let's see. Let's taste it one more time now. Very nice. I'm going to grab a lemon. Oh, man. I don't have any lemons. All right. I've got an orange. I've got a little mandarin. Maybe I'll squeeze a little mandarin in there. Wonder how that would taste. Let's try it. Citrus. I think the orange will be nice anyway in here. So I'm just going to cut this little mandarin in half. There's no seeds, so I don't have to worry about that. I'm just going to give it a little squeeze, add a little bit of that juice in there. Pulling it a little bit by ear. So it's one of those little cutie mandarins that you get in the bag. I did about half of one of those worth of juice. Not that much, probably. Probably a healthy teaspoon worth. Mix that in. I think it's going to be good. I can smell it. That orange actually smells really nice. That's nice. Yep. Adds a little brightness to it. That's a very good. All right, mulligatawny. This is ready to plate up and eat with a big chunk of crusty bread or a nice piece of naan, whatever it is you want to eat it with. It's ready to roll. It's going to warm you up on a cool, dreary, gray evening. Head over to the show notes for the recipe, and I'll kick it back to the studio. Thanks for listening in the kitchen as we made mulligatawny. Hey, everybody. I hope you enjoyed that mulligatawny episode. Remember, the show notes are over at kitchencounterpodcast.com/222. You can get the recipe there. Hopefully you didn't scramble to write everything down as I was reading it off. You can get better notes over at the show notes with the recipe. If you give this recipe a try, or if you have your own mulligatawny recipe that you like to use, I'd love to hear about it. Send me an email over to feedback@kitchencounterpodcast.com. I think if you like the flavor of curry, I think you can't go wrong with this recipe. If curry's not exactly your thing, maybe it's a good gateway dish. Remember to head over to southernfood.org to check out not only the Southern Food and Beverage Museum, but the Nitty Grits Network, which is a network of shows about food, drink, and culture. The Kitchen Counter Podcast is one of the shows on that network. Please go check out the sister shows. I'd love to get your ears in there to check them out. And keep your ears peeled for a smorgasbord episode coming out that will, we'll be more cash and we'll talk about 2023, what the future looks like, all that good kind of stuff. All right, everybody. Again, I hope your new year is starting off wonderfully. Get in the kitchen, cook some great food. Tell me about it. I'd love to hear from you. Until next time, I'm Roger with the Kitchen Counter Podcast. Happy cooking.